Hello, good evening, and bollocks.
Thank you to Mr. Roger Melly for showing up and introducing this week's pod. Oh, you managed to make us laugh at least, which I can certainly say I don't think either you, Milo, you, Ram, or myself have been doing much of today after the North London Derby. I mean, look, we've got a lot to get into as we look back at the game. Look, I'm as interested as the two of you to see where the conversation ends up. Personally speaking, my emotions are high. My level of rest is low. It's a short night of sleep. And my ire towards certain aspects of the game, indeed football in general, they've been kind of greatly aggravated today. It's all been, you know, brought to the fore, and I've had to calm myself down and, you know, exchanging messages with Milo has helped bring my steam down a little bit, like a bit of a voice.
I was winding you up more.
Yeah,
well, you were a bit. That's part of it. That's how I calm down, because I sit and I get wound up, and then I read, I'm like, well, you know, he has a point, fucker. look, don't worry. We'll probably light a little touch paper here and there. Look, amidst the emotions and opinions, and there is going to be a lot of that today and have been for all of us, yeah, we're going to strive for balance and honest analysis, as you know we always do. One of us was there, and we'll be talking to you, Ram, about that in just a moment. But let's start with nutshelling the game, but I won't raise our first flag of the day. In a nutshell, not nutshelling, chaps.
Declan Rice did to Ben Davis, isn't it? Nutshell him.
He did indeed. But in a nutshell, Milo, why don't you tell us what you thought of the game?
They're just such a bunch of jammy bastards, aren't they?
Yeah.
I thought we played quite well on the whole. I thought we started brightly. They were struggling with our press. Party particularly was, you know, kind of it was giving the ball away, and we were getting joy. I don't think we were making enough of those chances, because you know, the ball was getting caught under feet, or we just weren't quite quick enough in the final third. But yeah, I thought we started well. And then, you know, own goal, caught on the break when, you know, arguably, you know, we'll get into that, you know, we should have had an option at the other end. And then, you know, another set piece goal, and you're 3-0 down, and you're thinking, fuck, how did we find our way back from that? And then again, I thought second half, I thought we played pretty well. I mean, you know, Arsenal, you know, may well have sat back a bit because of the scoreline and played the scoreline, and that gave us a chance to get into the game. But I thought we played well, and it's, yeah, we just don't seem to get any breaks at the moment, and it's gutting, because yeah, I thought it was a pretty good performance on the whole.
Yeah, I thought we were the more dominant team for the majority of the game. I did think the game highlighted that we need to look at some of our set piece defending, because it did impact the outcome of the game for me in terms of the two goals that they scored from them. It's also addressed again for me that I think, and something that I'm sure Ange and the club are working on, that the need for players that can take on and go past players in the middle or of the last third of the pitch.
But
I think we can be proud.
Season.
What was that?
I just said, I wonder if anyone's mentioned that at all this season.
You had to do it, didn't you? You know he's just beaming with joy now.
I was going to say what we've highlighted previously, but I didn't. But
yeah. No, I mean, in fairness, Milo has been saying that.
He has been saying that, yeah. But yeah, no, but you know, again, it was another game that highlighted that. I think we can be proud of the way that we, of the team, of how they fought back in such a high-pressure game from 3-0 down at half-time. And I think it's very telling that even my most bullish Gooner mates reckon they got away with one today.
You know, Jamie Bastards is a really good start. I'm sick and tired of the inconsistency of the world of football, both on the pitch and more importantly, maybe off it during a game. And we will be getting into that as well. I don't think we're getting any breaks. None at all. I mean, there's nothing. And I'm finding it incredibly frustrating. And I found today's game enormously frustrating from that angle. Owning what we could have changed. There's several things we could have changed, there's no doubt, and there's several things we should have done better. But we did an awful lot very, very well, including sticking to the task. And I was very proud of the way that we finished the game, especially given all the stuff that happened to us that we will be getting into. I'm going to keep it the size of a nutshell, and that's where I'm going to leave my nutshell for the moment. But, you know, Ram, as we've already said, I mean, you were there. Have you done your deep breathing exercises since you got back? Did you see any errant gooners in the south stand? There have been reports, Milo actually, I think, got some reports that there were gooners being escorted out of the park lane by the police. Anything?
Do you know, I generally felt my heart in those final moments, and it was in full-on high-intensity cardio mode. I could feel it through my jacket, and it's Tottenham. Moments like that.
Good for your cardio health.
Yeah, exactly. The calories were burnt. It's in those moments like that, though, you know, those could be moments that I live for as a football fan, but certainly as a Spurs fan. But I was so hyper-focused on the game, I didn't even hear about the Arsenal fans in the south stand, let alone see anything. For all intents and purposes, now things are piecing together from what I could hear from people around me, and it seems it might have been in the concourse there was some nonsense, and then yeah, the police were called in.
Some errant goonery. Yes, well, we don't need to draw any more attention.
I took my Fitbit off before the game. It was an error, wasn't it? I could have got a day's exercise on the app from sat on the sofa. It was.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. So we had three changes. I mean, fairly significant, actually. Davies came in for Udogie, obviously, and I think that's a change that's going to stick for the rest of the season. More injuries notwithstanding. The big one was probably Højbjerg for Bissouma. Slightly less of a big one, but still one to talk about was Kulusevski back in for Johnson. So, chaps, what did you think of those changes? Milo, why don't you start us off?
Okay, I mean, I was a bit worried before kickoff because I thought the Arsenal are a really good pressing side, and I was really worried about Højbjerg in possession and what that meant for our build-up game. As it turns out, what it meant is that we largely bypassed him. So normally what you'd see in our build-up play is, you know, Kuti to Bissouma back to Kuti, and then a third man pass in behind for you know, the space created by players getting drawn onto Bissouma. What we were doing a lot more in this game, which was something we don't tend to do, was it was going over to the left-hand side to Davies mainly, and then Davies was playing a pass in front of Højbjerg, so we were cutting him out. So I think from one point of view, it's quite interesting. It's a build-up play we haven't seen too often in the past. It's one that I don't think we could do with Udogie in the side because he's not as good on the ball or not as good a passer as Davies. He's more of a ball carrier than a passer. But I think it's an interesting option we've seen teams match up one-on-one with us, and it's making it very difficult for us to play out. And that's why we've kind of seen these changes. And, you know, against Newcastle, we were playing long, which really didn't work. So as an alternative to that and a way of altering things, I think it's quite an interesting option. But, I was a little bit worried beforehand. I think, the adjustments we made meant that, I thought we played pretty well. I think most of those players were okay. You know, we can question Davies for their second goal. Højbjerg, I don't think actually was that good. I don't think he had much of a positive impact on the game at all. I don't think it was a change that worked. I think that's probably his last start we'll see from him. But yeah, I thought Deki was all right, and I thought he got better as the game went on. And I particularly liked him in midfield later on.
Yeah, I understood all three changes. I shared your uneasiness, Milo, before the game about why we would do that before a North London derby at home, especially changing our midfield in a manner that changes our style of play because of the players, you know, the player coming in. But I guess also we were looking at more experience, you know, and we do need to rotate. I just question the timing of it. Just refresh my memory. Is he still coming back to fitness, or was it like a choice to keep him on the bench today? Because for me, if he's fit, he plays.
I think he is fit.
I think it's back management, isn't it?
Is it?
Well,
back management. Go on.
He has had an issue with his back, but he's had 2 weeks off. So
yeah, so I was wondering about that. I think, as he showed when he came on, if he's fit, he plays. I know he's young, but yeah. That was it. But I understood the three changes. Obviously, Davies for Udogie being the most obvious one. I agree with you, Milo, as well. I don't think Højbjerg had a particularly good game. I thought, he gave away possession a few times as well. And I'd have rather have seen us perhaps just stick to what we know.
I think the tugboat was there for experience. I really do think that. I mean, that was my take. I have to say my expectations are never huge when he does start. I mean, you know, back to that famous Sir Alex Ferguson quote, that he gave me once, a bit of a name drop there, where not the first time, where he said, you know, you have players for what they do, not for what they don't do. Now, of course, to Milo's point, maybe the problem today was we didn't see what enough did he of do? What he can do. So it was a bit of a nullifier. So, but the point Pierre is, Mill I wasn't Hogue, expecting yeah. a whole fat do? Bunch. Well, in the bigger picture of the where we're at as a football club, I think that position is a position that we really have to get right, and we're still trying to figure it out. So,
yeah. I mean, I think I prefer him seeing out games. I think he's really useful to see out games. So I'm not, dumping on him. Bring him on in 80 minutes. He's really, really useful. I think to justify his selection today, there's been a lot of criticism about Bissouma defending when other teams break. And I think some of that is unfair. And I think it's also kind of ignoring what he's in the team for, which is, how we build out from the back and how we build play. Which we don't have any other midfielders who can do the same role as him. Mm. But to justify Højbjerg's selection there, you'd have to see a dramatic improvement about how we defended breaks. And Arsenal's second goal was from a break, and he did nothing there. I saw a lot of people criticising Bissouma for Newcastle's game when they were playing on the break. But Newcastle were kicking it over the midfield. Bissouma is upfield where he's told to be, and Newcastle are kicking it over him. He can't do much then. But, I think that we're not talking about the Newcastle game. I don't think Højbjerg did enough to justify that change. I don't think he was any better defensively than Bissouma would be, and he was significantly worse in possession.
No, obviously hindsight gives us all of these wonderful insights, and you're absolutely right, he wasn't. But, at the time, I looked at it and I was like, okay, maybe I can see this. Ben Davies made sense. Kulusevski for Johnson, it was a head scratcher in a sense, but knowing the way Arsenal are and knowing the way they were going to play, I didn't think they were going to make it easy. So, to get in behind the way we like to have those two wingers going. So I thought it was actually quite smart to have him coming off the bench. Maybe when they're getting a little tired, remember Tomiyasu's trying to ride out that yellow card. Oh, sorry, we're going there again. We'll save that for later, shall we? In the first half, I'm kind of going to start edging towards these things. We seemed to have no luck. Well, I'll amend that. We had no luck. There was no seam about it. We played well. We conceded an own goal from a corner. We got hit on the break and then conceded from another corner. We touched a little bit on corners. If we want to go into that further, let's feel free. And if not, we can start running through these key moments, one by one. Højbjerg's own goal. We can start right there. I mean, that's the first concession of the game.
Let's start there. That means we can do corners and go through the incidents in the first half.
You see, Pierre has his value.
Ram said earlier on that we ought to be practicing set pieces and defending corners. I mean, the first lesson should be not heading it in your own net. It was
a great header, to be fair.
it was a funny one, wasn't it? He's battling with Tomiyasu. He gets on top of him and is just trying to get first to the ball, and then heads it into his own goal. It's a monumental fuck up, isn't it?
It is. And Ben White's doing that thing, which I believe you mentioned this. A couple of months ago, the Ben White, the Ben White goalkeeper, block off shove tactic. So maybe revive that for us. Because I think it was very relevant here because it stops Vicario getting across to that post. You just can't get there.
Yeah, when we first got roughed up, so it was City, wasn't it, back at the turn of the year, and then we had the Everton game, the following one, where the same thing happened. And in those pods we were talking about it at that time, I was saying that, this is something that Arsenal have been doing all season, or Ben White has been doing all season. I think this might be an Arsenal innovation, roughing up the keeper. And it's largely gone unpunished all season. We've had it happen to us. I don't know, it must be fourth or fifth time now that we've had it happened. It's the first time that it's led to a goal for a while. By the time the header happens, Vic's free, isn't he? But he's behind his goal line at that point and then trying to recover. And, certainly with a near post header, that's going to hamper you, isn't it? And, if we talk about that, in the second half, we were a lot more physical at set pieces and we didn't allow Arsenal to do that to the same degree. And I think it was Saar, wasn't it, who was, I'm not quite sure who he was tussling with, but Michael Oliver pulled him over and, presumably said, you're not allowed to, rough up an Arsenal player. You're stopping Ben White. Give some to Vicario, how dare you, or something to that effect.
Reading, I can confirm that that's exactly what he said.
Yeah.
I was lip reading that bit, and it's exactly what he said. Yeah.
So, I think, you know, it has been a problem all season, not just to us. It's been happening to all teams. And yeah, it's something that we called out a while ago. We talked about, you know, what we thought we should do as strategies. I think in the second half, we did do what we've been talking about for a while. But yeah, it doesn't stop it being really frustrating, and it ought to be something that refs are putting a stop to.
Yeah, blunt question for you, Rem, and I'll hand this one right over to you. So, you know, do you think, where does the balance of responsibility lie here? Does it lie with the laws of the game and the officials who are running this game to see a foul on the keeper as a foul in that instance? Or does it rely more on Vicario being smarter and, like, when he feels that contact going down, waving his hands, making a fuss, doing something? Are we being too noble, or are the referees simply being too shite on this kind of stuff?
I think we're being, objectively, we're being too noble. But ultimately, if someone's roughing someone up else up like that in the middle of the park, they get a foul. So why is the keeper not being protected? And then we have to bring stuff in place then to protect the keeper, because it is, you are impeding a player from being able to fulfill his responsibility. That said, we are being too noble, and Vicario should be falling on the floor, you know, doing what other teams do, holding his face, you know, whatever. You know, it's not our way, but that's what the top teams do, and that's what we've got to counteract that, you know?
I mean, I think in terms of the officials, there's clearly been a directive on this, because it's been consistent all the way through the season, and it's not just Michael Oliver, it's all referees are doing this the same way. So I think you can say the directive's wrong, but this is how it's been, you know, the game is being refereed in the Premier League this season. So it's there's consistency, which, you know, one of your bugbears, Steph, is a lack of consistency. There is a consistency on this. Players are allowed to rough up goalkeepers at corners and set pieces, in which case the answer to that is we should be doing it as well. We don't do that. Yeah. You know, we should have Kuti, we should have Richarlison, whoever it is, putting an elbow in on Raya, or, you know, whoever we're playing, you know, that week, doing the same to them. Because if you've got a free pass on it, we should have some, because there's goals in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I have to say, I can't disagree with what either of you have said in that regard. I do think when it comes to consistency, you know, there's a wider consistency that needs to happen with how fouls are applied across the pitch, or a better communication of how fouls are applied in certain areas of the pitch and not in others. But again, that's for another discussion, which we might get into later. I don't know. But one thing I know that isn't in these notes that I do have to touch on, because I'm feeling a little petty today, a little tired. Which way am I going?
Go on,
which
Steph, one? Go on.
Go on. A petty corner, and he's you could see what he's thinking. But I know that you're with me on this. Ben White.
Oh, what
a wanker. What a total wanker.
Absolute.
A fucking arsehole. And let me say, him and his fucking spray tan, and I don't like football, I just play it. I mean, I could,
Do you know, aside from being a prick on the pitch, and probably as a person, he's a prick because his cheap Saint-Tropez spray tan gets darker throughout the match.
Unbelievable. Through the match. It's like Donald Trump standards. I wonder if they share the same spray on.
He looks like he's going to do a guest rap on a 90s dance track.
Yeah.
I think kind of shirt undone down to the belly button, white shirt undone down to the belly button, beads and a crucifix, you know, bad rap about positivity and what have you.
Yeah, either that, or he's getting into the worst areas of above and beyond in some shit club in Ibiza, and like fucking, you know, he's like just horrible. I had to say it because you mentioned. I mean, and this is the dedication that Ram shows. I want everyone to know he did send a message saying he's a fucking wind up on Malpay territory here. You texted me during the game.
That's like, Malpay levels of
just wankered him, right?
I mean, I dropped the C bomb.
Yeah, you know, that's fine. Yes, I think it's perfectly miserable. Anyway, sorry about that, but it felt good. Because he is.
Yeah,
he's
did.
A toss
he
ball.
Is.
He really he is. Probably the player on that club. I
you can, you can see There's why what happened with England, why it happened. Even
yeah,
though,
I don't, but yeah. We never understood any of that stuff, and still know, you know, that whatever, each to their own, but he's just a tosspot.
Yeah.
And you're not fooling us, Ben. That's not a real tan, so go fuck yourself. Anyway.
Holding's hair.
Enough of Benny Blanco now, is it?
it's unbelievable. Is it? So should we? All right, let me move on. So, okay, we've done the Højbjerg goal, and we've by proxy probably covered set pieces and corners. I don't think we need to go back there. The Van de Ven offside, gentlemen.
I just, as someone that was there, this is where VAR moments infuriate me, whether they're right or wrong. The limbs were flying, the voice went, I was hugging other men I've never met before, you know, and all that. And then it gets pulled back because Gabriel's arse wasn't thick enough by 3 centimetres or whatever it was. You know, it's just infuriating.
I can help you there. It's by more than 10 centimetres because the lines weren't touching. Each line is equivalent to 5 centimetres on the pitch. So Gabriel's arse was at least 11 centimetres further forwards than, if we want to be pedantic about this, we can be specific. It's over 10 centimetres worth of arse. But either way, I'm sorry that it ruined your enjoyment of hugging.
In my world, 3 centimetres and 10 centimetres are the same.
Careful, that's too much.
Dearie me. I'm holding fire. But yeah, I mean, to your point, it was a chaotic moment. I mean, I have my views, but Milo, why don't you take us away? Because you've probably got a rather more measured view of it than I have.
Well, it was offside. I mean, it's not. I get the argument against kind of ruining the moment. It clearly does. And, you know, I'm sure we're all, you know, punching the air wherever we were. And, you know, it's a great moment. Of course it takes away from that. But, you know, it was offside. There's no arguments about that. I've seen people talking about the ball coming off Tomiyasu, but, yeah, the rules again are clear on that. He doesn't have control of the ball. He doesn't make a deliberate play for the ball. IFAB issued new guidance on this a couple of summers ago. And yeah, it's not a deliberate play. So it doesn't make any difference. It's still the first phase of play that's relevant. He's offside, you know. It's,
yeah. I will, for the interest of abbreviation, I'll say thick lines, thin lines, who's drawing the lines, how they're being drawn. I was given no more encouragement.
I can talk you through
process.
That as well.
3 centimetres.
I'm really not interested in being talked through it for at least a minute. I would like to have my say. Yeah. You know, there was audio released of the whole Romero Chelsea debacle. You know, how and when and whether they arrived at the right decision after 4 minutes is one thing. The process itself was quite another, and it showed to me how much humanity, or lack of, or whatever you want to call it, but human, you know, the human mind and eye, and I don't know, in this case Etch-a-Sketch, is involved in kind of coming to that situation. And I refuse to believe that we can 100% trust these decisions. And I think the rule, I feel sorry for the VAR operators, because they've been asked to operate at an enormously high standard of efficiency, and to pedants and to assholes like myself, to everyone, we all want a piece of them. I think the rule has to be rewritten. I'm sorry, between that and the Coventry goal against Man United, this is not the spirit of the offside rule, and I think we need to actually seriously address that in the summer. I would love to see it addressed. So I concede that technically, through various whatever arguments, I want to say that, you know, it appears that they may have drawn the line in the right centimeter width. I'm still not convinced, but that's my own human infallibility and emotion getting into play. I don't, yeah, that's fine. Nobody's going to convince me they don't have infallibilities and emotions too. So until we can get that sorted out, I still don't fully trust it. Maybe that's
you don't have to worry about that part of it, because we've got semi-automated VAR coming in next season.
Yes, and no, you're right, which will hopefully help a great deal.
Where the players are is not going to be, they're not going to have lines anymore. So that will be from an AI model of the game based on the player, you know, the position of the players. What that does mean is that the tolerance we're talking about, so whether you've got an 11 centimetre arse or not, no longer matters anymore. If you're a millimetre offside, you're offside.
Oh, wow.
But so you don't have that tolerance anymore. And I think your argument, Steph, is that you want greater lenient. I'll be flippant here, Steph, and this will annoy you, but you want the decisions to be more wrong in order to feel right. In that,
no, you want more saying of that at all.
No. As I said, I'd be flippant, Steph, but you want greater tolerance, which would have greater allowance for kind of incorrect decisions if you give a greater allowance. But from next season, you wouldn't have those lines at all if that's your issue with it. What you would have had with this one is you still would have had a person, a VAR official, looking at the ball coming off Tomiyasu and whether he's made a deliberate play, or, you know, whether you've got someone interfering with play or not. So in this instance, you'd still have 50% of it, but it would be a quicker decision. And we'd have a quicker decision because you wouldn't have the Lions part.
Right. No, and look, I accept what you're saying, except for that, let me be very clear about what I want to see. I would like to see the offside rule adjusted so as what constitutes an offside does not leave us with such narrow millimetre margins. I think the entire concept of what a measurement of offside is needs to be calibrated, not from the VAR level, from the actual, from the FA laws. That's what I'm talking about, or the FIFA laws. Yeah. That's where I want to see the change.
Yeah.
So, you know, as for whether there's an attempt to play the ball or not, I won't get philosophical on you. We can save that for a summer pod. You know, I mean, one person's intent is another person's bad luck. Yeah, I don't know. Look, that becomes interpretation again. Yeah. So,
I mean, IFAB were quite clear on. They give examples of what constitutes it or not. I mean, I think this one there isn't. It's not a play based on IFAB's interpretation. And let's say this was.
Well, let me ask you both this, so as I can actually address the backside, if you'll pardon the pun, and the 12-centimeter backside. Do you both feel content that the offside law is what you're happy with? Are you happy with millimeter judgments like this, even if executed by Hawkeye and so on? Or would you rather see a rule change that actually suits the natures and the laws of how you play football more? And what we want from football. Penalise people for 3 centimetres, or do we actually want to penalise the intent to play someone offside?
Can we just be clear for a second? Mm. If it's 3 centimetres, it's not offside. So you've got each line is 5 centimetres. So, and if the lines are touching, it's not offside. Mm. So you've got 10 centimetres leeway at the moment. So this one, the lines don't touch, so it's at least 11 centimetres between the two.
So you're saying that every decision is made, there's at least a 10 centimetre difference?
Yes, yes, there's at least a 10 centimetre
difference. I think we could go back and question that. This is not the time for that, but I think that's the width
of the lines, so that's fact.
The thin lines or the thick ones? I'm not sure which ones are talking about.
Yes, they have the ones that are actually used. Yeah, yeah. You've got 10 centimetres leeway under the current rules. From next season, it is 1 millimetre. I think you were getting confused with Ram saying that he doesn't know the difference between 3 centimetres and 10 centimetres, and that it's just taking us off on a different time.
No, jokes aside, I think this is a fascinating conversation. Ram, you should come in because we have much to say, as you can see.
Next season it is a millimetre, which would be a crease of the shorts.
Ridiculous.
So just to answer your questions, Steph, whether I agree with it or not, I think firstly we should address that from next season. If, you know, with this AI coming in, it becomes a moot point because it will just be not even millimeters or whatever. However, I think we're cut from the same cloth in how we feel about things like this. And I think if we're going to make it when there is still a margin of error, then I think it needs to be a clear margin of error. So I think then I would say to your point, Steph, it needs to be, like a foot, a forearm length or something.
A foot is 12 centimetres and at least 11. So
I think what I'm trying to say is when we've had offside decisions with VAR at the moment, it's like it's literal like fine margins of someone's nose or someone's like fingers out, and things like that. Or today where someone's arse is just about keeping him offside. I think then if there is going to be margins of error, then I think it needs to be clear enough that the length is enough that give the attacking...
Sorry, can I just correct something? Actually, you've got a margin of error there. And I said that a foot was 12 centimetres. It's not, it's 12 inches. It's there's 30 centimetres in a foot. So
oh my God, it's half a foot. It's like getting a lesson in calculus up here. And then we're trying to... We're discussing loosey-goosey. He's on calculus. They should let the Games About Glory sort out offside, because, by God, between our various perspectives, we would sort this out. We'd have this sort.
Yeah,
I mean, for me, look, again, and I'm getting existential about it, and I promise I won't for more than another 30 seconds. For me, the offside rule is put there to stop people from obviously trying to play offside. But I think when you get to these narrow perspectives and margins, I mean, I think it does nothing for the game at all. And I would love to see the rule reflect that.
An emotional margin of error, essentially.
which I suppose you're right. And to Milo's point.
No, but I agree with you. Yeah.
Yeah, no, but to Milo's point, yeah. You know, we're going to be, it's the same as we're going to be to Hawkeye next year, and it's going roughly, and it's going to be the same as when the ball went in the net against Luton and we all thought it was a goal. I did from my perch in the East End, and it wasn't because the little signal didn't go off and we all accepted it and we all wandered off. And I don't think we discussed it once on the pod other than say, oh, I thought that was a goal, but the thing didn't go off, so it mustn't be. So to your point, a lot of this becomes moot, hopefully, because of the technology.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could increase the tolerance. I mean, they have increased the tolerance since it was first introduced. But if we're talking over 10 centimetres, you know, I don't know, say we make it 20 centimetres, we double the tolerance. On the length of a football pitch, well, it's still going to look pretty small.
They are testing on TV screen. My tolerance today.
Tested my tolerance today. A tolerance was set to low tolerance for Tottenham. Mm.
But whatever the tolerance level, there's still going to be a decision that's a millimetre over that, that's either on or off, and people are still going to get annoyed about it, however thick the lines would be.
Next.
But I think the key point is, and I think you're right, Ram, about kind of it ruining the moment. And but I don't see how you can officiate for. I mean, I think the only way you can do that is just say you don't use VAR for. You go back to how it was. You have linesmen. You accept that they get more wrong than this system does. But there's no stoppage in play. But that's the only way you can do it. You basically say it's going to be worse. It's going to be more wrong. And this is where I was being facetious with you earlier on, Steph. You know, we go to a system that is more wrong, gets more decisions wrong than the current one, but it's immediate, and we accept the fallibility. That's the only other. That's the only other option.
Thank you for your understanding.
Yes, and it's also accepting. It's also accepting that football is not and never should have become as scientific an exercise it is. Yeah. And let's face it, one of the only reasons it's got to this point is because there's so much fucking money involved, and there's so many millions of pounds involved, and that's and so the spirit of the sport. I think anyway, I will stop because I think we've covered it very well.
I just have one quick question for Milo, just in terms of the AI coming in next season. So what angered me so much today was the you know, us going through the motions of like losing our absolute shit and then it being pulled back with AI, with the AI version. Do you know, like, what is that, like an almost instantaneous decision, or is it like, will we still have all this?
So that's what I was saying. So this is, it's semi-automated. So whether Van de Ven was offside at the point the ball was played, the buzzer would be immediate, exactly the same as it is for goal line technology. Okay. But in this instance, you still would have had a VAR review on Tomiyasu's involvement in the goals. You've still got a stoppage for that, but it would be quicker because you're not drawing the lines. So the offside decision is black and white.
Right.
That's known immediately. It's just whether, you know, a player is at inactive play or, you know, what have you. That part of it is a human decision because it's subjective. You can't automate that.
So humans, wankers.
So yes, there would still be a stop, but it would be shorter than it would be normally.
I have an idea for Daniel. Daniel, if you're listening, as from next season, equip everyone who goes through the turnstiles with a little paper bracelet that's got an electronic like trigger on it that can trigger to the Hawkeye to stop us from celebrating if a goal is automatically offside by Hawkeye, thus saving 2 or 3 minutes of expended energy, and we can all just fucking stay chilled out until we know.
That's a great idea.
Thank you.
I think you got this completely wrong. What he would want to do is have in-seat service, so when there's a decision coming up, you can order a hot dog or a, you know, veggie sausage roll or whatever you want. The decision takes long enough that they can prepare it, bring it to your seat, and you know, this is where the game's going wrong.
Yeah, but it's these VAR breaks will be sponsored by someone.
The big bonus of VAR, and this is the one that everyone overlooks, is it really riles all the right people. And
what,
basically,
like me?
Yeah.
Love it.
Present That's company the, accepts it. I mean, you've said that the problem with all of this is it's making the game too scientific, and I'm thinking, what? That's exactly the best thing about this. This is what I love about the modern game.
Brilliant. Great. Brilliant.
Emotions.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Let's just round this bit off. I think this has been our best VAR chat since the pod started, by the way. I think it's been great. But just to round it off, to your point, Ram, Ange said in his post-match when he was asked about it, he said, I just don't bother celebrating anymore. The refs on the pitch aren't reffing the game. It's being reffed away from the stadium. I mean, it was, I mean, I'm paraphrasing him. You should go and check out his post-match quotes. They're damning without being damning, but it just shows that he's almost, I mean, I think resigned to it.
I'm the same in general.
Resigned to it. You're not. You're not, because you will always celebrate a goal.
I mean,
like me, you'll always celebrate a goal.
You know, if you're sat there...
I mean, I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
If you're sat there taking copious notes at this point, you don't have this worry, you know. This is... You never have to go back and delete notes.
It's good, but I mean, in my tragic spot on the couch today, well, I wasn't the game. No, you're right, you don't. But I actually heard the commentator, and so help me, I should never listen to these guys. But the guy said he scored, and then he said, and the linesman's flag hasn't gone up for offside, so there we are. It's like he kind of dragged me down the big path of hope. He really did. And the longer that Van der Ven was pointing his badge and they were showing me the close-up, I didn't actually punch the air at first. I just went, yes. And then as it grew and grew, I'm like, it's standing. It's nothing. Yeah. No, it's good. And then I looked.
When you talk about Angie's comments, I think actually kind of the next point is probably more relevant for that, whereas, you know, the Saka goal and then the trip on Deki, where Trossard catches... I think maybe Tripp. I don't think it was an intentional play, but they're both going on the edge of the box. He catches his heel. Deki stumbles a few steps and then goes to ground. Arsenal get a break, results in a Saka goal at the other end. What do we think of that? I mean, should we pick, as we're having a kind of conspiracy fit quarter hour, should we pick up the Deki part first and then go on to what happened at the other end of the pitch and what have you? I mean,
I think,
go on. No,
You know, we've been discussing it in the chat, and I was at the game, so I only saw it the one time at the time. But having looked back at it literally half an hour before we started recording, I 100% agree that if Deki goes down, you have to give it because it's impeded him, regardless of whether it was, you know, fully intentional or not. But it is perhaps a lesson for Deki to take the fall despite staying on his feet, being a key strength of his. You know, that's one of his key strengths, is he doesn't go down easily, you know. But I thought it was a penalty if he'd gone down.
We are, I think, still, and this is something that we've been for a long time, and it's one of the reasons why when the Battle of the Bridge comes up, I'm always secretly happy we had that, because it showed me that we could be a little bit, you know, wanky ourselves. We are very nice, and we do play with a very earnest heads up way. And I can't disagree with you. When I watched it back, well, at the time I thought it was a penalty. When I watched it back, it's not intentional. You're absolutely right, Milo. I mean, he's caught Deki and forced Deki to catch himself, actually, and kind of stumble. Deki hits the deck, he gets a penalty. I just think that when the referee is looking right at it, he's got to surely understand that it's been impeded. And even if Oliver doesn't see it, I don't know what the threshold is for VAR to say you need to go and take a look at this.
I
just don't understand. They obviously didn't think there was an error, but there was. It was a clear error. I mean, when you stop and you're looking at that, what are they seeing that's so different to what Lee Dixon's seen, to what Ian Wright has commented on? We've got two Arsenal players there saying that they thought it was a penalty. I mean, what is everyone seeing that Scotley Park aren't?
Let's go through that step by step. So, I mean, first of all, like you said, there's definitely a coming together there. Deki tries to stay on his feet and then goes down. I think a smarter player goes down immediately, particularly when they realise they're not running anywhere. Yeah. So he's not, you know, he should have gone down straight away. I think Oliver is probably thinking that by staying on, you know, because he stayed on his feet, there wasn't enough in the contact to make him go down. So it's not a penalty. It's not a foul. It's not a penalty. If that's what he told the VAR officials, so when there's a conversation between the ref and VAR, the VAR aren't just doing their own thing. If he said, I saw it, I don't think there was sufficient contact to bring him down. When you watch that again, there is nothing on that video that would contradict what Oliver thinks he saw. Because there is contact. He's seen the contact. He doesn't think it's sufficient for it to go down. VAR can't then say, well, yes, it definitely was. Unless... you know, he took out both his legs.
Oliver
missed that.
Mr. Oliver.
That's not what the threshold is. It's not to get every decision right. If Oliver says, I saw it, I don't think there's enough to go down, VAR can't intervene on that because...
I see. So we're at human error then.
Yeah. I mean, if Oliver hadn't seen it, if he'd been looking the other way or picking his nose or scratching his ass or something, or, you know, I don't know, you know, whatever it was, didn't see it, then VAR might say, you missed something there. Go to the monitor. You might want to have a look at this. But if he's seen it,
how
can
you then say that? But let's bounce to Ben Davis. How does it work with Ben Davis then? I mean, he's got whacked in the nadgers, obviously. Are we just now measuring the fact that a trip from behind versus a whack in the nadgers, it's down to what's
a whack in the nadgers is. Well, it depends on what he saw. I mean, I think this is, it'd be interesting to, I'd imagine that both incidents will get picked up when we have the VAR, I forgot what it's called now, the VAR television program.
Yeah, I know the one you mean.
Where they go through it, yeah. So I'd imagine that we'd get both and we'll get the audio in those. So we should find out there. Yeah. We'll come on to the Davis one later on. Maybe I should just leave it there.
Yes.
But I think, there's clearly a lot more force on Ben's nuts than there was with the Trossard one. You know, if you think it's two players coming together, there's contact, but it's not enough. He stumbles and falls. Then I think that is different than a boot between the legs up into the nadgers.
Yeah. I think for me we're in this weird area of human interpretation of if what's worse, punching someone in the face or like punching someone in the side, for an example, one is obviously worse, but the other can be equally as damaging in its own right. In terms of penalty area infractions, they both have the same potential to cause damage to the team that's on the receiving end. You know, you are preventing them from continuing an attacking movement. And as you well know, I saw something else that I was not entirely convinced by and that we were discussing back and forth with regards to decisions. I just felt to me today, and this was another one of those decisions, where there seems to be a real intent not to check. I mean, unless you absolutely had to. So,
they would have checked it, Steph. It's just whether there's, whether there's enough in it to come to a different conclusion. And, there would have been a discussion between Oliver and the VAR officials, and he would have told them what he saw. And if they think that's a reasonable interpretation of it, if it's a reasonable interpretation of it, then they're not going to tell it, send him to the monitor. And
You're absolutely right. So let me state on this pod that I think their threshold is inaccurate, especially when reflected against some of the egregious decisions I've seen this season. And again, we're back at consistency and application of it. And I think that that particular situation, the application was not consistent with what I've seen in the game this season. So I disagree with their interpretation.
Are you talking about the decision or Oliver's decision not to give the penalty?
Contact was made in the penalty area.
Okay. So
I think we're discussing whether Michael Oliver thought it was enough.
But we completely agree on that. I think it probably should have been a penalty. Mm. But when we're talking about VAR, we're talking about a different thing. You know, VAR are saying, was Oliver's interpretation of it reasonable? Because I think the clear and obvious thing confuses everyone. Was it a reasonable interpretation of it? Yeah, I think it probably was a reasonable interpretation of it. If Oliver had given it, VAR isn't going to overturn it. And we're in that space. But I think it probably was a reasonable interpretation. Davis getting kicked in the nuts isn't a reasonable interpretation of it, and that's the difference.
Mm. But you could equally argue that was a follow through that initially had been. I mean, there are so many ways to interpret these things. I think that one looks more obvious than the other, but I think they're both fouls. I mean, that's my take.
But we agree. But what I'm talking about is VAR's ability to intervene in it. And it comes down to whether, what Oliver thinks he saw, tells them he saw, whether that is reasonable. And with the Trossard, Decky one, it is reasonable. It is reasonable that, there might have been contact there, but it wasn't enough to bring him down and he came down. I mean, that's possible. And I don't think that's one that regularly gets overturned. I think that, they sometimes get given. But I think on VAR would very, very
didn't
rarely
today,
do that.
And I think
No, of course not.
Maybe
course
we
not.
Should no, just park
and,
it there.
And we agree on that, Steph.
Right.
Anyway, Graham.
At the other end. You're watching us. But this is a season's worth of VAR. That's good. You're just sitting there like, fucking hell. What sort of parallel universe have I ended up in? Good Lord. Inches, centimetres, big bottoms, fucking reasonable arse size, he's thinking. Is it reasonable to have a 12-inch arse?
At the other end. Speed up. Come on.
All right, go on. I'll take that. Saka's goal without the penalty incident, again, objectively,
yes,
beautiful counter-attacking play. You know, Saka took the ball down so well, excuse me, as well, and was I thought he was supremely confident going into the box. I think we could have been a bit more aggressive, but he made the space for himself well, and, you know, and the finish was just very simple, very, very elegant. but it was, I think, obviously, it's heightened by what happened 30 seconds, not even 30 seconds before that. But yeah, it was great counter-attacking play, which, you know, we like to play like that as well. And, you know, we like to score goals in that manner. So you can't argue that. But yeah, I just felt we could have been a bit more aggressive coming at him. You know, he's a great player and he made the space well for himself.
I think smarter positionally as well in that initial phase. I mean, I definitely think Ben Davis is everyone's been drawn to the sender, and it was just, I mean, it's, you know, I think it's a blown cover. I mean, let's be honest. Nobody wants to leave Saka in that space. It's a blown cover. We've defended counter attacks poorly. It has to be said many times this season, this is not the last. So there's probably not much more to say about it.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. I think, once we get to kind of our box, I think, you know, Davis takes a little slip, doesn't he? He's not quite close enough to him. And he probably should have shown Saka down the line. I think Van de Ven should have been closer to Saka, given his pace and given where we were and, you know, the threat that he poses. I think Van de Ven's very, very central. I think this is what you were saying, wasn't it, Steph? I think he should have been closer to him, because then he's got more of a chance to do that. And I think he's probably better placed to show Saka out to somewhere where he can't do any damage.
Yeah. And I think if we could probably also say that the fact that Ben Davis is there and not Udogie may have had an effect on even the way that Van de Ven was playing that particular moment in that position. I mean, you know, maybe a little more speed with Udogie. Who knows? Who knows?
But I think that means that Van de Ven should have been closer to him. So, I think you're saying about that. I think, you know, if he's doing that, then he should have been closer to him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, by the way, I don't care what anyone says. You've enjoyed the best VAR conversation you hear in any pod. Very well.
I don't enjoy them, Steph.
I just want to review the VAR bit. Saar, you know, comes on for Bentancur at half time. Richie and Biss come on for Madison and Højbjerg on 63 minutes. You know, Cutie scores a minute later. Do you think that Ange made the right changes at the right time? I think it's a self-answering question, but let's answer it anyway. I mean, maybe to address the performances of the players that came off. We've already addressed Højbjerg. I mean, what about Bentancur and Madison today?
I just don't think either of them had a particularly big impact on the game.
So,
I mean, I think he did make the right subs. And, you know, I think kind of the three of Saar, Bissouma and Deki as a midfield three would be the one I'd be starting against Chelsea on Thursday. I think they did a lot more in that final half an hour than the others did before that. We looked a lot more threatening, and part of that will be down to the momentum of the game. Part of that is down to the game state and Arsenal, you know, thinking they've got, you know, the three goals to the good and they can see it out, you know, two goals to the good. But I think they were just a lot more imposing and kind of dominated the game and dictated the game. No arguments there at all. I think those subs were right. And, you know, I think the only question there then is, you know, we're talking about the changes he made to the starting 11. Are they effective because Arsenal are tired and where the game was? Or if we'd started with Saar and Bissouma, you know, does that have a positive impact from the beginning? I don't know.
I agree with what you said about Madison and Bentancur. I think being slightly more knee-jerky, I might have made a couple of those subs at half-time. But he did make them at the right moments, because a minute later, like you said, we scored. I think to your question, Milo, about, you know, the tactics, if we had started with Biss and Saar, I think Arsenal were uncharacteristically a bit jumpy and nervy and giving the ball away, and, you know, and we pressured them. They didn't handle our press very well. I think in those moments, I think I'd love to have seen Saar get on the ball, you know, in those moments specifically. And so maybe that might have been a bit of a difference, because I don't think we capitalised enough on that, which we mentioned earlier. But I think they were the right subs. Madison, you know, I really want him to be the player from that first sort of before his injury. And I wanted him to kick on. And, you know, we've talked about that. He's coming back from injury. We don't know how long he's going to take to come back fully fit from that, or whether it takes him, you know, how long it was going to take him, but he's not the talisman that I want him to be. And he has been. Bentancur again, I think it's a bit of a maybe a bit of a hiding to nothing in terms of you know where he's expected to play and what he's expected to do, and maybe the things that he is doing that maybe we're not seeing as well. You know, I think I love him as a player, but there were the right changes to make and they made the difference. And Saab just brings, like I said earlier, I just want him. He's young, but I want him starting every game possible, you know, whilst protecting him, because he's the energy and the pace he brings to that midfield is unquestionable.
Yeah, I think it's really fascinating that James Maddison has largely, for me, played himself out of the first 11 at this point. You know, Milo, you brought up the midfield you'd have against Chelsea. I absolutely agree. You know, conversely, I think that Deke has played himself back in to the first 11, you know, especially with today's performance. I thought it was greatly improved from previous games. And you know, Maddison's drop-off is it's a point of fascination for me, and I'm going to be watching it closely for the rest of the season because, you know, give or take a miracle here, let's face it, we're not going to finish fourth. So essentially he's playing now or helping us play to finish fifth. And I really want to see what he's got and what he can produce. If he is hurt, maybe, you know, he needs to get in there early and get some rest, duck out. I don't know. That's the most fascinating bit of this right now for me in terms of the midfield. You know, let's look at Romero in general, shall we? Look, I mean, there's a great little question here that Milo's put, which is how much chatter would there have been if Vic had fluffed the pass as badly as Rea did to him? I mean, there would have been quite a lot. I think we can both, all three of us, say that. But could each of you address the finish? Yeah, he's been served it up, but he's still got to put it away. It's a derby. It's not like it's a 6-yard tap in. He's still got a ways to go.
No, and it's not as you know, it's still a bit of distance as well. There's distance between him and Rea. There's distance between him and the goal. And he sent him the wrong way. He sent it back.
Yeah, I mean, it's beautifully taken. I think you were saying about talk about Romero more generally. He was excellent today. I mean, I think he has been for months. And I think, you know, since the Chelsea game, he's barely put a foot wrong. And for me, he's the standout player of the season for us at the moment. He is imperious. He's by far and away our best player this season. Yeah. And the levels he's playing at are just, you know, so far ahead of everyone else. And he's our playmaker. You know, if you look at how we play out, how we build from the back, he's our playmaker. He's our best defender. He's a threat all the way around the game. He's one of those players that, I mean, I think everyone, opponents know how good he is. He just has more time. People steer clear of him, or, you know, he's just, those best players seem to have a kind of force field around them, don't they, on the pitch? And just other players don't want to get into that space. And he's got that. And I think everyone he's great. He's really, really good.
He intimidates opposition players. Yeah, he's intimidating, and I don't just mean, obviously, you know, you've got the side to Romero that quite aggressive, you know, vicious side to him, but in general he intimidates other players. Not beside that,
it's his quality, his like quality as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I echo everything that you've both said. I think for me, the thing that I would add that has really continued to impress me, especially again today being an example, because it was a powder keg, potentially. There were plenty of potential powder keg moments. He has, since the unfortunate Chelsea moment, seemed to have been somewhat of a personal final straw for him. His discipline has been fantastic, and he has shown that you can maintain your aggression, you can maintain your punch and your ways, and you can learn to be smart. And I commend him for it. I'm not sure, has he received more than one booking since January?
I don't think he's even had a yellow card since then, I don't think.
He's incredible. Not had a yellow card.
Incredible. Yeah.
Can I just say on Rea briefly? We'll go for Trossard as well, because they're both players that we were linked with. And I know that, you know, quite a few of our fans were very, very keen on Rea in the summer. But looking at it now, both of them are the most Arsenal players that have ever Arsenaled. Oh. And I can't believe any of us ever thought that they could play for us, because just look at them. They're Arsenal.
Yeah.
No. And I just, you're very well said. Yeah. And actually, I think, I know there would have been chatter if Vic had fluffed the pass as badly as Rea, but I think he's earned more than enough points to, you know, like, to kind of not be susceptible to sort of the shit that we could throw at him for that. Also, do you remember this? Was it in the end of the first half or the second half? He made an incredible save.
Biggest second half off Saka with his foot. Yes, yeah. That was early in the second half.
That's a game-changing save to a point. Obviously, we still ended up losing the game, but you know, at that point, would it have been 4-1 or 4-0?
4-0.
4-0 at that point.
They were 3-0 up. It would have been 4-0. Yeah.
You know, there'd be no fight back. There'd be no, you know, there would have been no two goals or whatever. Or there might have been a goal here or there, but yeah.
It's his first season in this league. I guarantee that the education he's had, when he looks back in the summer, I think we'll see him come back with a few more nousy tricks in his back pocket as well. But I wouldn't change it. I wouldn't have the other guy for Vic. No way.
He's the only other player that I would sort of... I still think Kuti's sort of streets ahead in terms of our player of the year, but he's the only other player I'd have kind of coming up behind him.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Have we covered, the momentum did shift. I mean, there's no two ways about that. I think we would all agree with that. I mean, you know, I think we've covered Ben Davies's attack nads, haven't we? We've done that.
Yeah.
There's just one thing I was going to say on that. It occurred to me that if Declan Rice had kicked Kuti like that, he probably would have broken a metatarsal.
Fair comment.
Very good. I'm going to let that sit for a second so people can enjoy.
That was a good one. That was good.
Yeah, I like that.
I do just want to say one thing about the momentum change after the goal. It was a monumental momentum change. We felt it in the stadium. Yeah. It was, you know, because normally 3-1, you think, okay, we pull one back at least. But it was a genuine, like, let's do this.
Yeah.
It was a huge, huge moment.
Yeah, no, look, I think at 3-2 as well, you know, another problem I have with the officials is how they keep time. Not only can they not measure inches and centimetres or whatever to my specifications, they also can't keep minutes properly. If there was only 6 minutes of added time in the second half, I'm a monkey's uncle. Look, we come to the basic, some of the most important questions now at the end. We'll rattle them off quickly. Should we feel proud of the team despite the result?
Yes.
Absolutely. Yes.
100%. Is Richie's new bleach blonde crop a high point in an otherwise bad period for Spurs haircuts?
I liked it.
I don't think it's enough to offset Højbjerg's whatever he's trying to do.
Or Madison.
Like, what does he do?
Madison at the side there. Look, he looks like a dog that's come back from the vet after an operation.
I was about to say, what is going on there? It's really bizarre, isn't it? I was thinking it's a bit mangy, isn't it, on the side?
Yeah.
Madders, if you're listening to this pod, at least sort that out.
He's losing it a bit on top as well. And then he's kind of got the... I mean, I don't know whether him and Højbjerg... I think they must think it's still lockdown or something and they're getting their girlfriends or their wives or... I don't know what their relationship status is to cut their hair for them, but...
Well, I think... No, you're onto something because I've been looking at that increasingly and thinking... But weirdly, I've been thinking, is this like the fact he's not paying attention to his Barnet? Is this like an indication of his form being off as well? He just doesn't give a shit about anything. I think really...
Reverse Samson.
Yeah. I mean, if I were Madders, I'd be shaving it off.
Yeah.
I agree. Go Bex. Go Bex, Madders, and actually maybe try and get some of his original form. I agree. I think Richie's blonde Barnet is sensational. Always. Very good. Okay. I expect on cue. What do you think of Arsenal?
Shit.
What do you think of shit?
Arsenal.
Thank you.
Very good. One positive and one negative in 30 seconds.
Shall I go first?
Yeah, absolutely.
So my positive is that it was better than Newcastle in terms of the performance. And at 3-0 down in the first half, I was fearing the worst. And I think, another tonking off the back of that would have been, I think, would have really knocked our confidence. But I think there are some positives from taken from that. And the negative, I do think it kind of shows how thin our squad is and how much work there is to do. And, you know, when you look at us compared to Arsenal, who, you know, they're playing quite a similar style of football, I think they're quite a useful benchmark for us when we look at, you know, where we want to get to. It does show us that there's, I think, the significant gaps there in terms of where we need to get to. You know, we've touched on some of them, you know, particularly if you look at how, you know, susceptible we are on the counter attack. You know, despite us dominating a lot of the game, I don't think we've troubled Arsenal too much. And that's been a bit of an issue with us for quite a few months, actually. I think where we've controlled games, but not done enough with it. So, yeah, I think the negative is that we've got a long way to go yet.
I agree with both. I'll say the negative for me. I did say it was kind of our defending for the counter attack and also for the set pieces. But now I think I'll just say a little bit of that top team mentality with things like falling over when we need to, you know, making a meal of things when we need to. And then the positive Absolutely. Is just that we didn't roll over, you mm-hmm. know, we, and that's why we should be proud of the boys, because they took it to Arsenal. They knew that they could take it to Arsenal, and we almost got a result in the end.
Do you see what you did there? I kind of like it. You said there's a negative to not rolling over, and there's a positive to not rolling over. Wow, man. Symmetry. Anyway, I am tired. The negative is that we lost to those fucking wankers. That's just, I mean, there's no, I don't need to usher any more negatives. Anytime you lose to those cunts, it's just absolutely gutting. It just is. The positive is that we did not give up. Despite the 12th man and whatever else that I feel happened, we did not give up, and we continued to show commitment to the style of football that this manager wants to play. And once again, as I find myself saying, everyone complaining, you know, we're in the middle of trying to build something. So either believe in it or don't. And read his press conference, right, Milo? I mean, his press conference breaks down for people. It's not just about set pieces. There's a lot of things he's seeing that aren't right. But trust him to get them right, I would say.
And Steph, I'd counter that. I'd say we're at the beginning mm-hmm. of the rebuild, not the middle.
Okay,
this
great.
Is the beginning.
I'll take that. Yeah.
Can I give you a bonus positive as well? So this one from one of our listeners, James King. He said, "We've scored 15% of all of the goals that Arsenal have conceded this season."
that's great. Very good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, the joy. Can you imagine? Anyway, if we had have equalised that one. Anyway.
Oh.
All right. Well, I think we've done ourselves proud there.
Right. Shall I get on with the week that was?
Yes.
Yeah.
And let's kick off with our under-21s who secured top place in Premier League 2 at the end of the league phase. There's now a series of playoffs to determine the overall league winner. This is a big achievement for the under-21s, especially when you consider that they were relegated last year and were only stayed up because the league changed formats. It's a huge achievement, isn't it, chaps?
Great. Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
The youth are going wild.
And I think...
the kids are all right.
The playoff format, I think... it's a bit novel for English football, but the idea of it is that the players, it gives them more competitive games, because the problem with a lot of youth football is that, you know, there isn't that competition. There isn't a lot at stake. And by giving them the kind of knockout games, they've got more crunch games. So it's meant to try and give them better experience. So anyway, it's good.
Great.
Pre-season. Yeah. So on Thursday, the club announced that we'll be heading to Japan to play J-League champions Vissel Kobe on Saturday, 27th of July. It's the first time we've visited Japan for 33 years, and the game will take place at the National Stadium in Tokyo. We already know that we're heading to Melbourne to play Newcastle in a post-season friendly on the 22nd of May, and then we're going to play Bundesliga runners-up Bayern Munich. Well, actually, they could still finish lower than that, but at our place on the 10th of August. Presumably, we'll see one or two more dates added before our 24-25 season gets underway. I wouldn't be surprised if there's another one in the Far East. If we're in Japan, you wouldn't be surprised to see us in Korea again, would you, on the way back? So what do you think, guys? We seem to be planning our friendlies around Angie's former haunts.
It's true. I mean, I have to know that you're right. I mean, I have to say Japan in July is going to be such an insane level of heat. I mean, the humidity is going to be, I mean, if you want a quick fitness camp in 95 minutes or whatever of football, you're going to get it there. Unbelievable. I mean, it's going to be, yeah. So the players will be running hard and running hot from the get-go. So if that's good training, if heat training is what you need to get players back into shape after a little time off and probably not enough, then yes, perfectly positioned. But
presumably they won't be expected to do 20 laps of the length of the pitch after they're playing the game. So yeah.
Yes. Painting the lines of the pitch with vomit. Yeah, they won't be expected to do that. You're right. Yeah. No, that's good. But look, I mean, is it what I thought supporting Tottenham Hotspur was going to be about, expanding our worldwide fan base to this level when I first started supporting? No. In 2024, I think it's great. Let's let people who don't get a chance to see our football club enjoy us where they can. I think any chance that you get, and I know what it's like when Spurs visit foreign shores, it's very exciting. Sports clubs love it. And why wouldn't they? It's great. So good. I'm all for it. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, I think we have to, there needs to be a shift of change of in mentality,
yes.
In that saying that this is how the game is now, and we do have a global fan base. And I echo, I didn't get to see Spurs in the flesh when I lived over in Australia and New Zealand, but having been part of the fan clubs over there and being some of them are even more visceral than the ones we have back home, they deserve to have Spurs come over and you know, and for them to have an audience to get to watch them play live, because they're rabidly like loyal to the club, you know, and they
absolutely
because they are because of the distance as well, you know, and so I think, and we need we're a brand, you know, we are a brand at the end of the day, you know, as well as a football club, and we need to kind of be doing things to enhance that brand.
Yeah, and Tokyo, what a fantastic city to go to, what a fantastic place to play.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
That'd be really good. We've had another leak of next season's kit, or some spotty teenager has been busy with the Photoshop and conned everyone. Let's assume it's the former for the moment. It's sky blue, it has textured stripes, there's a cockerel in the centre, a bit reminiscent of the 80s Lecoq Sportif second shirt. What do we think? Will you be buying it, Steph? Is it enough to forgive Nike for Torp Haze, or is it another horror show?
Well, yeah, it's definitely reminiscent of the Centenary kit from 1983. It's 1983, I believe, and Source playing that several times. Yeah, it's got that reminiscence. It also has a little bit of a reminiscence of the Coventry shirt, doesn't it, from 87. It's got a bit of that. But I like your read, much more of the 83s. Yes, I will be buying it, actually. I really like it. I like it a lot. I think it's really good. Yeah, and I love seeing the badge in the centre. Love it. So, yes, nothing can forgive Nike for Taupe Haze. That's one of the most bizarre. I mean, it just had nothing to do with it. Well, I don't even want to open up.
We don't need to go there again. It was just a flippant remark. Ram, what do you think?
I think it did remind me of Coventry, actually. Yeah, and it is a bit of a throwback, but I probably wouldn't buy it myself. But I like the badge in the middle as well.
You'll buy it.
I think there was another leak. Yeah. So there was a leak earlier in the week that looked nicer. There's a leak this weekend where it's not quite so nice. The it's got yellow banding on the shirt sleeves, and the stripes aren't quite so nice. They're kind of irregular. But I suspect that, like most of these things, when you see it on TV or in the stadium, you're going to get more of the overall colour rather than the texture of it, and it will look better. And then finally, so the club have put in an application to Haringey Council to increase the number of major non-football events that can be held at the stadium from the current 16 to 30 a year. Obviously, this would be good for the coffers. But Steph, I assume you're excited this could finally realise your dream of a 15-night scooter residency. What do you think?
I bet he wishes he hadn't put these flippant comments in now, because he knows the risk is I could go running off for another 5 minutes.
A monologue.
All I'll say is harder, faster, scooter. That's all I'll say. He might have read that right.
Derude in support to you, Ram.
Yeah. You will be there, won't we, Ram, in our new away totally. Shirts, yeah. Dancing to Derude. Like a couple of complete spanners, but loving life.
Ben White pops up to do a guest rap over part of it.
Oh my God.
Dearie me, you had to shit on our dreams, didn't you, for a moment?
Oh, man.
It would actually be fun. And look, I mean, that is, at the end of the day, we have to be able to laugh about things, however painful they've been. And I have to say, when you nipped off for a loo break there, Milo, we were talking about the fact that this pod, you know, it's as much a therapy for us sometimes as it is for our listeners, hopefully. And I really, really appreciate the opportunity to scale through my emotions. Today was rather more emotional than I wanted it to be, I think, for all of us. And at the end of the day, it's nice to have the holistic view of it and remember that this is a journey. It's not about necessarily today's destination. So thank you, chaps. It has actually been a lot of fun.
Cheers, Steph.
Nice one, Steph. Thank you.
We've got Chelsea and Liverpool in the next week just to keep our spirits flying high. Hey, you know what? We might be doing an instant reaction pod after the Chelsea game. You know, hopefully that will consist of just us laughing for 30 minutes at them, that is, or we might not. So you'll just have to keep an eye and an ear out for that. So it's either Friday or as normal next weekend that you will be joining us again. And thank you for that. And we'll see you on either of those days.